I belong to the bed.
Welcome to week 16 of Technonautics. You might notice we sound a little different this week. That's because we're coming to you in glorious television. If you're listening to the show, run along to technonautics.com and watch the video. It will change your life forever. I'm Gareth Stack. On my right,
Jason McCandless.
And on my left,
Francis McGillicuddy.
We are the Technonautics crew.
Woo! Yeah.
For the past 16 weeks, as of now, we have brought you some of the most insightful and fabulous news ever created. But we have grown tired of merely being audio, so we've decided to enter the world of television. This is our inaugural vidcast.
It is.
It is.
And we've got beer.
And we've got plenty of beer.
We've got beer. Hooray!
But it's something more than that. This is Ireland's first ever vidcast.
Welcome in.
Yeah. Our vodcast.
Or vocodocast. Or any other naff name you want to call it. It's not an IPTV show, and that means we have one camera and no angles, no cuts, and no edits.
Yeah, and no production value at all.
And no budget. So, bear with us and enjoy. Moving on to our first ever video story.
Shocking.
Brought to you by Jason McCandless.
Okay, and our first video story is the Google Blogger article. And this week he's come to us with a bit of news on Google's new features. Google Mobile, suite of features for US only cell phones. Mobile search lets you search the web from your phone web browser. I've used that in the past myself. It enables you to browse any website, any HTTP page, converts it into WML. Very handy feature. Google SMS text answers to your questions directly to your phone. Still very glitchy, however. The following features are available: business, residential listings, driving directions, movie showtimes, weather conditions, stock quotes, Q&A, product prices, and definitions. They're also allowing mobile carriers to integrate Google search into their own sites, making Google mobile search available in a variety of flavors: XHTML, WML, iMode, and PDA devices. No, we didn't know what iMode was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
we've seen a massive iMode projection on the side of a building.
It's obviously, yeah, Steve Jobs is here. he has an iMode.
He has an eye projector.
An eye projector, yeah.
Being heavily advertised
in an eye building.
On an eye building in iDublin. And this is an interesting strategy from Google. Do you know what iMode actually is?
It's a new kind of way of browsing the web on your phone. Essentially, it's like a suite of protocols for delivering the data, and it's a lot faster than previous ones. And I think it comes from Japan.
So it's actually functional. It's not just like a branded web or whatever.
No, it's a brand new feature thingy. Cool. It's getting all hyped all over the world right now.
Yeah, sell more phones. Really, that's all it's for.
I think our light's burning up.
We have a giant bright light which will probably explode at some point during the show.
Sparks. That'll be entertaining.
And hopefully it'll
be glass. Yeah, exactly. Have me screaming around the room on fire. That'll be highly entertaining.
So keep watching. Anything can happen.
Death serious casualty or death.
On a vidcast.
On a vidcast.
So a new strategy for Google. Obviously Google's stated mission is to bring all the world's information accessible to everyone. At all times. On the loop. And now they can't put their phone. You can, out of toilet paper, text. Use their toilet paper.
I should go to it live.
Even in a recording. One of the interesting things with this, it's not a live feature yet, but it's Q&A. Fact-based questions that Google parses in real time. How awesome is that? So if you say, who was President Johnson's mistress, or whatever, it will say, Google has not got an answer to this question, please text again. It costs you another 25 cents.
Hooray! So, like, more ways to, like, settle those arguments rather than a punch shop in the pub. It'd be like, Google going...
A phone up.
Yeah, a phone up. Yeah, exactly. Hold on, Google, give us the answer. fight you for it.
We'll
say 5 minutes
phone.
With the cops.
Wow,
to turn.
And it might even be better if you turn around to the camera. But you won't be able to
but
see
you won't
it.
Be able to see
it's
it.
Really it's terrible. He's got this oldest phone in the world.
Exactly.
It sucks.
It
but
sucks.
I'm a student, so...
Yeah, we're all students.
I need to spend the money on beer.
Probably more handsome than you expected, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
If you want to have sex with us, our numbers are... No, no, you can find
you don't
us
need our numbers,
way.
You can find us.
Through the internet. Yeah, okay. Moving on to our next story, which does not involve having sex with us.
Ah, exactly.
Or it could, but, you know, hopefully the FBI will leave that for the Islamic
exactly.
prisoners.
Well, this week's story, one of them, regards the FBI keeping tabs on you, if you happen to be in America. This summer, George Christian was given a letter by some people in the FBI. They turned up one day when he was in the park, handed this letter, and it requested that he hand over all subscriber information, billing information, and access logs of any person used a specific computer at a library branch some miles away. This was an example of a national security letter, which originated in the 1970s, as a way for basically the security services to check up on suspected terrorists. So, after 9/11, the rules regarding these letters were widely expanded so that now these are sent out as a matter of form. So, if someone feels like sending it out to you and finding out about anything and everything that's happened in your life, they can. And there's no oversight. Absolutely none. They can send them out. Apparently, they send out about 30,000 a year, and Congress doesn't look into it. There are no rules. There are no checks and balances. And the worst part is this data is being gathered, it's being kept, and there are no real rules on who they're going to hand this out to. So they have down as give it out to possibly state, local, and tribal governments and for appropriate private sector entities. Ooh, so it's like, hello, Mr. Businessman, would you like to find out what all these people have been doing? There you go. Here's my wad of cash. Thank you.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It can mean anything.
And this is terrifying. So this applies to any information kept by any business on you.
Yeah,
which could be when you travelled, where you travelled, what you spent your credit card on, what you bought your mistress for your second fake honeymoon with her or whatever.
It allows them to gather almost everything except like do a phone tap
with that, and it doesn't require any kind of judicial intervention or warrant of any kind.
No, there's no Congress oversight or. They don't need to go to a judge or to a grand jury to get these. So it's literally just some bureaucrat in an office going, all right, we want to get the records on this person or every person who's associated with them. The idea the government has is that, ooh, we have a terrorist suspect. So if you happen to sit beside him on the bus, suddenly it's like, whoa, he sat beside him. He must be an associated collaborator. So let's get all the records. So their argument is that they get to eliminate people quicker, carry out, you know, find out whether someone is worth looking into more seriously. But they're keeping the information. You know, there are no rules and checks and balances, so it's brutally open to abuse. And I think, really, they get the information on every single person in the United States. There's nothing stopping them except logistics. You know, they're... Whew, it's madness.
And with this amount of NSLs, you've got to wonder, I mean, what are they using them for? 30,000 has got to at least stray into the area of ordinary everyday criminals, and it's almost more than likely, you know, if somebody moves into your area who they're suspecting of a certain crime, they'll just get, you know, all the information they can on just about everybody who lives in that area.
Yeah, it's meant to be for terrorists, but there's no rules stopping them for doing that. And I'm sure you knew the right person, the FBI, and you needed to find out something, you're just going after a drug dealer, I'm sure you could grab the information. As I said, state, local, and tribal governments, so maybe that'll mean the state police or anyone else, who knows? There's no rules, there's no controls, there's no one answerable for this. So
local government, that's like your local council. So say you've got an objection to something that's being built in your local area. your local council decides, well, we've
dig up some dirt.
Yeah.
Dig up some dirt, let's see what he's been buying.
It's ooh, like a license of blackmail. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrible. And the worst, one of the bad things about it is when someone receives one of these letters, they can't tell you that your information has been taken. So you never know that the government have actually accessed all your records. apparently they have this appeal process where you can like go, oh, you've taken my records, that's wrong, but no one will ever have told you that your records are gone in the first place. So it's ridiculous. And they're going to bring it into law that if you are told that your records have been taken, the person who told you is breaking the law, and they will be put in jail for it. So, oh, it's scary. It's so Big Brother style.
We can ask what we like, and you can't even ask what we're asking. Or yeah, even ask the person that we asked if we asked about you.
Exactly. Because you won't know anyway.
This is some terrifying stuff. And I find particularly worrying appropriate private sector entities. Who the hell are appropriate private sector entities to have this kind of information about you?
The highest bidder.
Exactly, yeah. It seems to eliminate all the privacy legislation that was brought in to like control how companies, what they do with the information about you. I mean, it neatly sidesteps all those issues, because if a private sector entity just goes through Congress, well, that's fine. They can do what they like with that information. It doesn't have to be accurate. It doesn't have to be given to you if you're a faster.
It's madness that government entities are not answerable to the people. And in this case, they very much are not answerable to anyone. So, obviously, it's open to blatant abuse. And if it's not happening already, I'm sure it will at some stage.
So this is like a child joining the altar service. It means he's so likely to get abused that it's pretty much certain, really.
Moving on to our next story.
Ah, here we go again. Me again. I get all the good ones. Okay, CNET.
Rootkit time.
Pardon?
Rootkit time.
Rootkit time, yes. Sony and their wonderful rootkit. The repercussions still flowing on from that one. Well, CNET has actually called for a boycott of Sony because, obviously, Sony, the rootkit has not been anyone's flavour of the month. And it's just another example of how companies like Sony are not on the side of consumers, but are out to nickel and dime us and just try and grab as much money as they can and try and charge us for things which we already get for free. So, short-term solution proposed by CNET is just stop buying Sony products of any kind. So don't buy that PSP, don't buy that Walkman, go somewhere else.
You've got a PSP, right? Francis?
I know, but I did that before now.
return it or break it, just break it.
Ah, yeah, straight out with the hammer when I get home.
There'll come a time when you can't break,
you know.
Yeah, exactly,
because it's circumventing the
exactly
gorgeousness of the packaging.
Yeah, exactly. Probably against the rules. Probably a bunch of Sony heads burst in the mall and go, are you Sony's altering our product? Come on. Are you altering our product in any way?
That looks like you're trying to crack into it with that hammer.
Ooh, trying to access the hardware. Could be in trouble. Anyway.
So this is kind of interesting, because I saw a blogger's article during on Dig today. And this blogger was like, this is why I steal Sony music, because you invade people's PCs, because you're a pigopoly, and because most of your music sucks, they don't steal most of it, but I steal the occasional track or album. And you really can't argue with that. I mean, if you're downloading Sony music and not buying it, I mean, it seems like it's very justified at this point in time.
Well, I think the main point of the article was that what Sony did will not actually hurt the actual big scale pirates, the guys maybe who are often, I don't know, Thailand, or I'm not saying Thailand is a place for it, but say some certain countries are known for piracy, okay? And this ain't gonna hurt those people. They're still gonna be producing millions of CDs and stuff. This is only aimed to hit, you know, the home consumers, the guys who maybe buy a CD from Sony and rip it to their computer or put it on their MP3 player.
Yeah, on their iPod and share it around their house. Maybe give it to their friends.
Maybe. And that's about as far as it goes. This ain't going to hurt the guys who are basically making a living out of this.
No.
Who are making millions and living in big palaces.
Sure, we should just clarify. I mean, for those who didn't listen to the last show, we're on Mars for the last couple of weeks. The Sony rootkit debacle is about the software that Sony is illicitly installing on your PC when you run a Sony CD, which kind of intervenes between your drivers and the actual playing of a CD and takes over that aspect of CD playback and will kill your computer if you try to remove it.
It's essentially a Trojan horse. It is a Trojan horse, and it's a hacker tool.
Yeah. Two other updates on this story this week are that Microsoft disapprove of Sony's actions regarding the rootkit, and the first virus using this rootkit has been released into the wild.
Oh, great, so Sony helping hackers. Hooray! And screwing up your computer.
It's good though. Yeah. If you want to like cheat in World of Warcraft, it's a good idea. We can hide those processes for cheating.
Excellent.
Yeah, but you're opening yourself up to Mr. Hacker Man.
Chris, you got a question why Microsoft are opposing this. I mean, what this really is Sony controlling what people do with their music, which Microsoft don't want to be controlling because then they can't put it on their Xbox and have Microsoft control it. So, you know, it's also fighting against the online market of Apple. Well, it's kind of encouraging it too, but it's fighting against the use of music online, really, and against consumers moving their music onto other devices and
exactly,
so on.
Exactly, but
CD sales are dying.
They're still pretty high. I mean, people have been saying they're dying for years, but I don't see too many HMVs closing down or whatever, so.
Hopefully, next couple of years.
Ooh,
like HMV's
nice. Someone's not feeling the HMV law.
HMV, loveless.
Loveless.
Anyway, I think our screen's gone dead there.
Our screen has gone dead? Does that mean your laptop has died, or what does that mean?
No, it's using a screensaver.
Hooray! You've got a screensaver on your laptop, but you know that there's no possible damage to your laptop screen by leaving it going, right?
I know that, but I'd like to turn
go
it off.
Go and fix it. Go.
It's fine, we don't need to see ourselves.
That's true, but I like to look at myself occasionally. Come on, you can't complain.
Dears, let me have a constant look at Garrett's house. Look at
oh,
me.
Oh yeah, well it worked.
Look at me.
Alright, well, moving on to another story from Francis McGillicuddy.
And again, me again.
The man
what's
for
with the hegemony on the stories, Francis?
I don't know, I've got the skills.
You're elite.
Elite, yeah. Okay,
we can
well,
teach you the skills, eh?
Yeah, I can teach you something. Anyway.
Lads, keep
that to a minimum.
Keep it R-rated, please.
Yeah, that just went down to PG.
Okay.
Anywho, on the 15th of November, Transmedia will launch Glide, an integrated suite of applications, all of which you'll be able to access through your internet browser, and this includes applications for sharing, creating and selling photos, music, video and documents. So this is going to be a lot like Microsoft Office on the net, Flickr and a lot of Yahoo's and AOL's products. So you will be able to do everything from mailing your friends, sharing whatever music you have with your friends, sharing photos, a myriad of things, and the basic package is going to be free. However, Transmedia are also licensing the software to other companies so that other companies can incorporate it into set-top boxes, so essentially people will be able to turn it into their TV, will become their access to the internet, and Glide will be how they access the internet.
Good idea.
So it looks like a good idea. It's going to give extra competition to Google, AOL and Yahoo, because people will have one central area where they can share all this stuff, and content creators will love it because you can't actually share music on it. You can only, the files are streamed, so you can actually go to your friend who's online and go, hey, do you want to listen to this tune? And you can put it on and they can listen to it, and they don't actually have a copy of it, it's only streamed to them. So it's nice, gets rid of piracy, as they like
maybe,
to say.
Yeah.
Maybe there are ways around it, but Jason's probably, the wheels are turning right now.
another streaming online service I seen today on the web, they managed to find that it actually stores files in some temporary directory. You can just cut and paste
scan
them from there.
That's an obvious thing not to do.
Yes.
Let's have a temporary directory where we store all our files.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not good.
Well, it's definitely moved towards the idea of software as a service, and we know that Microsoft are aiming to do this to move Microsoft Office and a lot of their programs to the web so that you just access it through a web browser. You don't install it on your computer. You can use it anywhere, but you just basically pay every time you use it. So it's handy for people who maybe only use Office once or twice a year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we all, well, some of us might have bought Office, and like, I know I have, and I've never used, I've used Word, I've used PowerPoint, I have barely ever used Excel. It was a waste of money.
You actually paid for Office.
You didn't pay for Office.
I got student edition, I think.
Oh,
student!
Oh man, if you gotta pay for it, you shouldn't be doing it.
I think this transition to online applications, which is supposed to happen in the last 5 years ago and 10 years ago, it's finally seems like it's going to happen. But it's a good idea because it's cross-browser and cross-platform. So any computer at all, and you got access.
Yeah, it's good, but it's this walled garden paradigm again. It's you can't really listen to the music, and I'm guessing you can only open the documents. You're hardly going to be able to export them in Doc or whatever. You're probably going to only be able to open them in Glide, and it's subscription based. So it's not really Web 2.0. I mean, it's Web 1.5 or whatever. You feel like,
well, certain parts of it are subscription. They have like 3 models of service.
Mm. With I think it's 50 megs is it you get for free, and then you have to pay for
yeah,
more for
you
extra
don't
services.
Have access to all the applications. You've only access to a small number. But the idea is that I think they're depending on cable and telecoms companies to start offering Glide as part of their package,
sure.
So that, you know, your first page when you load up is Glide,
yeah.
Or something
yeah.
based on the Glide API, so that they basically grab all this and suddenly you're into Glide and that's all your mail and everything. And
this,
so this is your portal.
Yeah, something else to make money out of.
Well, this
yeah.
is something Cringely's been saying for like 5 or 6 years, that what grandma needs when she turns on the web is, you know, when she turns on the computer, she needs a web browser, she needs email, she needs Word, and, you know, maybe once in a blue moon she needs something else, but anything else on top of that is just to open files like Acrobat or whatever she's been saying. So this is like computing for everybody else.
Yeah.
So if they can build Glide into thin clients like TVs or whatever, it could be a hugely profitable venture and could break that Microsoft Edge money. But again, I mean, this is just going to be a new Microsoft sort of thing. It's not. This isn't a company that's got
yeah.
an open and real idea of what sharing is on the web and why that's a good idea and how you can build a business around that.
Hmm. No, it'll do grand for grandma because she'll be able to like share her files or, you know, say some of her kids have taken photos and
yeah.
be able to share the files or some home movies with her, and there'll be tiny streaming files, so her maybe slightly narrower connection will be able to handle it. I mean, web connection.
You've got
dirty minds. Dirty, dirty minds. Dirty. Oh.
Those of you who've been to grannyporn.com will have seen Granny's slightly narrow connection.
Ah, jeez.
This is the sort of thing we usually cut out, right?
I realised it after I said it.
Francis, you sick monster. Moving on.
I think
within the context, people know what I'm saying.
Did you have a point to make?
Yeah. A good Linux setup box would work very nicely for this. Something developed by a company, kind of like Linksys did with the WRT54G router. Something they didn't actually intend for to release the source of that. They didn't realize what they were doing.
Yeah,
somebody just accidentally put it out there. Like,
they didn't realize that they'd have to like release the source code. But of course, like they use Linux, they have to just GPL.
Yeah, fight the power.
Fight the power.
That's such a Napoleon Dynamite.
Get it.
But anyway,
so we're alpha nerds now, is that it?
Well, I think I can only aspire to alpha nerddom. One day maybe we'll all be alpha nerds.
Dude, geeks, not nerds.
Yeah, geeks.
Geeks?
Geeks?
Geeks are nerds. Nerds.
Yeah, who cares? Come on. Moving on to another story.
We can't cut any of it out.
Again, by me.
Right,
it's all about me.
Do we want to explain how we do the stories, how that works? I mean, because we're moving into a whole new world.
A new dimension. Sight and sound.
I like what we did in the test.
Televisual.
And we're controlling your channel.
No, it was like we're going two dimensions, from side to side, and up and down, and also in three dimensions.
Time. Yeah,
it was more fun than we did before. Okay.
Control the vertical and the horizontal.
Yeah, that's it. The arguments.
Yeah, we got it.
The arguments.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Moving on to another story from Francis. Okay, well, let's just explain how we picture this. Okay, so we all find stories and put them on the wiki, and then at the start we go, okay, which stories do you want to do? And for some reason, Francis decided to do
the first
five stories
because everyone switched off at this stage, so it's all me.
It's just Francis fans now. It's like, you know, that 50% of the audience that just watched.
Yeah, they can switch off after I've done this one.
They can just, you know, save all the stream captures of you
in your pose
or whatever you do. I don't know. Anyway, back to the story.
Yeah, they probably liked him like taking the first drink of that, but all right, never mind.
Okay.
What were you?
You're never mind.
That was a little minty. Just a little.
They know what I mean. Rewind it back. Yeah,
you rewind it back. And slowly, in slow motion if you can, watch him drink.
Oh, dude. Oh, my.
Okay. Well, move on.
Oh, dearie me. Anyway, this one is titled Cheap Fusion, at last. Physicist Eric Lerner has proposed a new way of carrying out nuclear fusion, which is the way the sun provides its power by converting hydrogen into helium, isn't it? So he's proposed a new way of carrying out fusion reactions, and his alternative project, which he's proposing, will cost billions and billions less than the Tokamak fusion project, which is currently underway in France, and it's costing a ton of money. He just needs a paltry few million paltry to get his project off the ground, because he's been working on it for the last 20 years. Certain parts of his equation he's already proved to be correct. He just needs to basically build a prototype and get this thing off the ground. So obviously, the advantages of his system over what they're saying in what they're building in France is obviously it's cheaper, and secondly, it produces a great amount of energy, obviously, for very little input. It can be turned on and off at the flick of a switch. It produces pretty much no waste, except it does produce X-rays.
That's all.
But he has figured that he'll basically put a whole bunch of collectors on the outside of it, which will also gather in the X-rays and convert that into electricity as well.
Okay.
So everything's geared around making electricity out of this. It also will not use the traditional method of generating electricity, which was heating water to create steam to drive turbines. This will basically generate the electricity directly from the fusion reaction.
Shit. Now,
yeah.
That's revolutionary.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Now, I go into the science bit, but
I want to do the science bit. I want to do the science bit. I don't get it either, but I want to read it. Okay. The science bit. The process works by firing pulses of electricity through a hydrogen boron gas, creating hot conducting plasma whirlwinds, which are twisted by magnetic fields into plasmoids. Magnetic fields then fire an electron beam at the plasmoids, igniting fusion reactions and gaining energy before finally being decelerated to produce electricity, some of which is recycled to restart the process.
Okay.
Did he really surpass a billion degree temperature in the lab?
He certainly did.
He was like, oh, it's a billion degrees in there, baby. Oh, stop doing that thing you do.
That's friction heat. He's also the man who invented lubricant. Coincidentally.
Obvious.
Coincidentally.
Shortly afterwards. After putting out the fire.
He's the man who proved that Gulliver wasn't in the dictionary too.
It isn't.
So despite the billion degree temperature which he achieved in the lab, frisky, he hasn't been able to secure.
He did seriously achieve.
No, he did. He's got published papers on it.
Seriously?
Yeah, like a hoax.
Revolutionary. No, it's like it was published in like,
that must have been one hell of a thermometer.
Yeah.
It's a billion degrees.
I measured by pouring the magnesium on my eye. Or whatever.
Plumbers don't use magnesium. What do they use?
Mercury.
Magnesium.
Fair enough, I didn't do science for the leaving.
Yeah, sure.
Shut up. So despite being the first researcher, he hasn't been able to secure government funding.
That's rather shocking. He was being...
He needs to get corporate funding.
Well, that's the thing. He says that he can't get government funding because he's taking on the oil and gas industries. Taking funding because they are the oil and gas industries. So,
apparently... Well, he's surely going to get funding at some stage because any energy companies, if they're not looking into alternative fuels at this stage, they're idiots.
I don't know.
Wait a minute, you've got 30 years left. They're looking into alternative fuels and make advertisements out of it.
That's like 30 years is an eternity in corporate America. We discussed this a long time ago, how I think in 5-year spans. The Japanese think in, like, at the most, like, it's like 2 to 5 years is their profit kind of... reflexivity or whatever. The Japanese think in like 10, 20, even 100 years ahead. So for like a corporation in the United States, 30 years, ha ha ha, I'll be retired. I'll probably be dead. I don't care. And you'll all be baking in our globally heated environment. But it doesn't matter. Maybe that's the reason.
Well, the corporation will be retired. It's not, but they don't.
I mean, corporations don't think like... I mean, we're all in this mindset where you think a corporation's kind of got a mind. But it doesn't really. It's full of people. All of them will be retired or don't
care. Executives... You think they really have a control over, like, corporations?
Well, they have some control.
Some, but they can't, like...
He might get funded by NASA again.
Have you ever seen that Walmart episode of South Park?
Pardon?
Yeah. Alright. Yeah, it's good.
Okay. Watch South Park.
Yeah.
Official Technologies. Stamp of approval. Fantastic. He was funded by the JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at NASA. Got his funding cut off because of funding cuts, thanks Bush. But might now be funded again, you guess, because of the trip to Mars.
Maybe the trip to... Well, I thought Bush announced that he wants to go back to the moon. And then that launching pad.
And they're sending shitty shuttles, like... Or not even shuttles,
they're not
sorry,
going
rockets. Not even reusable vehicles anymore.
Well, yeah, but they're an improvement because the reusable vehicles never really worked that much in the first place and they were hugely expensive.
Yeah.
They could have worked if it was probably funded.
Jason had been on the project! God damn it, it was obvious!
It's when they strapped the solid field boosters onto it. That was never planned from the beginning.
Yeah, they should have got Jason there at the planning stage as he was an embryo.
He was a smart kid. My arm is so cramped from that position.
Yeah.
It's like a chicken wing.
It's not the most comfortable of
douches.
Douchebags.
Do we have the sign?
It's not actually a douche.
We call it the douche. It's just called the douche. You probably can't see this, but
yeah, American viewers are probably thinking
something
else.
There. It's there.
I want to show everybody what it says behind this poster.
Dude, do we have time for this?
No sex on the douchebag. We don't have time for it.
Take it out.
Okay, so moving on to our next story.
Swiftly move on now.
Swiftly. Go.
Moving swiftly. How long?
Swift the notes.
Do you have any kind of time?
I have no timer, do you?
Okay, I have a timer. I'll get it in 1 second. And the next story is read by Jason McCandless.
The Mechanical Turk.
Oh my god. My timer still says 49 minutes. I don't know why. Moving swiftly on.
Son of a bitch, we don't know. Okay. Amazon's Mechanical Turk, and we don't know how much time we're having.
Go. So.
It's a new service. They call it artificial intelligence. So, real intelligence?
Yeah.
It ties human intelligence to the needs of software agents. So, essentially... If you've got like programs that need humans to kind of like data entry, those kind of tasks, menial stuff that computers still can't do, they set up this service that connects the people that need the tasks done to people willing to make a few bucks.
It's hardly menial tasks. It's tasks computers can't do.
But they can be pretty simple. They can be like identifying the cow in a picture.
Yeah, but that's something computers can't do very well.
We can do it really easy. Sorry, I mean menial for us.
Yeah.
Menial for us.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry.
3 beers.
It pays micropayments for cognitive tasks. Human intelligence tasks.
Okay. Moving on. Two more into the story.
So the human processing time can be used by companies at least two ways, as part of an automated process that otherwise would be impossible, and to build up banks of semantic data with the goal of training artificial intelligence programs for specific tasks. Now, we didn't understand what the term semantic meant before,
okay.
Did we?
No, we didn't so much, but now we do.
Should we explain what it is? Okay, then
you
use that. Well, semantic is... I'm not good at explaining it, actually.
You explain it.
Bah. way to put me on the spot there.
We're the beer.
Yeah, when you were going, oh yeah, I understand. And you were there nodding, yeah, I understand. And it's like, oh, there you go.
Well, semantic web is a series of logical statements and sites and databases containing information logically stated that information that machines
it's tagged so machines can understand.
Not just tags, but statements that say
tags and true, RDF and those are data formats, etc., etc.
It's adding meaning to data. Data about data.
It's allowing machines and databases to understand simple statements and link together in meaningful ways.
Okay. Amazon's profit margin, this is 10%, so they're doing well out of it. And in case you didn't know, a Mechanical Turk was actually basically a large kind of robot machine thingy that they built back in 1600 or something like that.
1600s.
Yeah, and they got it to play chess with people, and people were amazed by this machine
that
was beating everybody.
Benjamin Franklin.
Wow.
The original one. And it was destroyed in a fire in 17 something or other. But it took until previous century, and a magician or illusionist eventually figured out how this thing actually worked, and it was a huge, big fake.
Yeah,
there was a person actually inside, and he was actually moving the pieces and freaking out where the pieces were being moved to. Obviously, he was good at chess as well. Small. No, you don't want to do that.
So if you're tiny and small, good at chess and got a time machine, perfect job for you 400 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should move on. It's enough about that story, I think.
Enough about the story, but I mean, I don't know, I think we should get into a little bit of the implications of this, because I think it's really quite interesting.
Okay.
I mean, this is for the first time, this is humans serving the needs of machines rather than machines serving the needs of humans. Well, for the first time, I mean, I do it every time I reconfigure.
Yeah, it is the Matrix, actually, isn't it?
I mean, it's not with the Matrix, but it's adjusting that human-machine interaction.
TechCrunch called it the Matrix.
Yeah, that was just a headline to get people to read the story. But anyway. And I don't know, there's a number of difficulties that I thought might be problems with it. Humans are quite slow at completing tasks. Slow to pick the task, slow to sit down, slow to say, I'll do this, and I think I'll sign up for Amazon's program. And when they actually do the tasks, I mean, they're much smarter than computers and lots of things, but they do a hell of a lot slower. And, like, there could be a hugely high cost. I mean, even if they're paying, say, 5 cents a task, and a task takes a couple of seconds to do or whatever, that could add up enormously. And so it's going to sort of keep out of the game a lot of smaller companies, a lot of Web 2.0 services that could do smart stuff with this. And arguably, it's not cost effective. I mean, it's yet to be proven. And when you go to the site, there are no tasks to do. So it's still...
Yeah, it still has to be embraced by companies and...
It's really just an API at the moment. I mean, you can code for it, but there's no tasks, so...
It's kind of like an extension to a site called Rent-A-Coder, actually. Rent-A-Coder.com, I think it is. A few of my friends go on there, sign up, do a few jobs, get some extra money. It's cool.
Oh.
Moving on.
And like Rent-A-Sphincter.com as well, which is also
similar.
But for a whole other reason.
Okay.
Should
flat
we
patents.
Do a Wayne's World transition thingy here? Never mind.
Well, yeah, go on.
Blog page.
Moving swiftly on.
Moving swiftly on.